time to talk a new book called Infinity in the Palm of Your Hand. And the author of the book is a man who's an award-winning writer and broadcaster. He joins us now, Marcus Chown. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Good to talk to you, sir. Your past is fabulous. Formerly a radio astronomer.
Yeah, I was at the California Institute of Technology, which is in Catalina in California. Sounds very exotic, I know. When I was very young, I was interested in astronomy. My dad bought me a book about astronomy, a little telescope, all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to be a professional astronomer. But when I ended up doing it, I realised that actually astronomers don't really look through telescopes anymore. They haven't really since the discovery of the, well, since the invention of the photographic plate, which was much better than the eye at picking up light. And, of course, radio telescopes, they don't even pick up anything.
No, sure.
So I got to become a professional astronomer, but it wasn't quite exactly what I thought it would be.
Oh, bless you. Well, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, I love astronomy, and when I was little, I remember very vividly being taken on a school trip to Jodrell Bank near Manchester and just looking up at that huge radio telescope and going to their planetarium there, and that was me. I was hooked.
Well, it's fantastic. In fact, last year I did a festival. I can't remember. It's called the Blue Dot Festival, which is at Jodrell Bank in Manchester. And it was amazing. People take their tents and they camp there, or you can rent a tent, beneath this amazing dish, which is, I think, 210 feet across. I mean, it was built in about 1957, but it's still really impressive when it's lit up at night. And they have, like, music, and they have space talks and that kind of stuff.
Great.
And it was just a terrific place.
Wow. And I think I'm trying to remember that now. It's a vivid memory because it had such an effect on me going in a planetarium there, for example. I went home and I learned how to make my own home planetarium with a tin can and a 6-volt bulb.
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's amazing those things that do affect you, you know, because, I mean, we're now coming up to the 50th anniversary of the first moon landing.
Yeah.
You know, that'll be July next year.
Yeah.
And I do remember, I'm of that age where my dad got me up at 5 o'clock in the morning,
and me.
Those fuzzy images, and really, when I recount this, I can feel it now. I feel a kind of shiver going down my spine.
Yeah.
A human stood on another world.
Amazing.
And I was alive to see it. I cannot believe it.
Yeah, incredible. I've not seen that movie yet about the life of Neil Armstrong, but it sounds like one that's worth watching for people who are into space.
It does, and I've seen reviews where people say, "Oh, it makes it seem as if it was all, as if it, you know, because of the tension, it makes it feel as if it wasn't a foregone conclusion." But of course, it wasn't a foregone conclusion, and in fact, they only had 40 seconds of fuel left.
That's right.
And Neil Armstrong brought the lunar module down on 20th of July 1969. I mean, they didn't have very good pictures from space of where they were going to land. And as he was coming in, he noticed through the window there were these giant boulders the size of houses. So he had to actually abort the landing and continue on. And they landed with only 40 seconds of fuel.
Amazing.
So that's how close they came to total disaster.
It's incredible. I've been lucky enough to have on the show Buzz Aldrin. Who, of course, was on that mission. And you talk to a man and you think, my goodness me, this man, what has he done in his life? And tragically, he ended up being a blooming used car salesman.
Well, bizarrely, I actually went to a launch of a book by Brian May, actually, of Queen.
Oh, yeah?
At the Science Museum on Monday. It's basically the moon in 3D. Brian May is obsessed with 3D.
Yeah.
And they...
Well, his hair, you just look at his hair and you would know from that, really, wouldn't you?
Well, I think when he was about 10, he saw an advert on a Weetabix packet or something.
Yeah.
Or 3D glasses, and it's created a lifelong obsession.
Oh,
he created all these books where you know, you have these 3D glasses, and you can see these pictures in 3D, and he's done this book on the moon. And the reason I mention it is because they had Charlie Duke, who was one of four surviving astronauts who stood on the moon, actually in a kind of video link, in a Skype link.
Right.
So that was absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
But he had incredible trouble trying to use Skype, and I thought, my God, you know, this guy's gone to the moon. You know, he was a pilot, and he can't make Skype work, but never mind.
I bet the Skype signal was worse than the one from the moon, actually.
He was the youngest person ever to stand on the moon, and he's the one who left that photograph, colour photograph, of his kids on the moon. It's in a plastic wallet. He did it, he admitted on Monday, because he hardly ever saw his kids because he was doing so much training. He felt so guilty That's why you put the picture on there, so you could actually say to him, look, I've left you on the moon.
Oh, how fantastic. Well, the moon is fascinating, but the stuff in your book, if you just read the kind of headlines of it, it's just brilliant. And I've been reading them this morning to our listeners, and I've got to just run through some of these with you and get the answers. And the one which is perplexing me here is, if the sun was made of bananas, it wouldn't make any difference. Well, explain, please, Marcus.
Well, first I should say that I've written books. I wrote a book called What a Wonderful World, which is about everything. I mean, you can't write about everything, but it was about, you know, everything from finance to thermodynamics, you know, sex to special relativity, that kind of stuff. But when you come to give a talk, you know, you don't have time. So I used to think, well, what can I do? You know, like a stand-up comedian, you've got to think of something that grabs people's attention.
Yes.
So basically, my book is 50 bonkers things about the universe. And
brilliant.
These are things that I would use to grab someone's attention and then explain the deep science behind it. Now, you asked about if the sun were made of bananas, it wouldn't make any difference. The point I'm making here is that the reason that the sun is hot is incredibly simple. It has a lot of mass. Okay?
Yep.
So it's all that incredible mass which is being squeezed down on the core. And when you squeeze things, you make them hot.
Okay.
If you ever squeeze the air in a bicycle pump, it gets hot.
Yep.
So all that incredible mass squeezing down on the core, and the core is about 50 million degrees. Now, it turns out that that's all that's making the sun hot at this instant.
Oh.
So if you were to, the sun is like a billion tons of mostly hydrogen gas. If you were to get together a billion tons of microwave ovens in one place, or a billion tons of bananas, you would get something equally as hot as the sun.
Really?
Okay, now that tells you instantaneously why it is that hot. Of course, there's something else going on. The sun is constantly losing heat, so something is replacing it as fast as it's lost. And maintaining it at that temperature, which is only determined by its mass, and only in the 20th century did we discover what that was.
How amazing! I thought it was some complex reaction that was vital, and if it went wrong, we'd all be finished.
Well, it is. That's what maintains it at that temperature.
But
it maintains it at a temperature which is determined only by its mass. So if you go back to the early 1920s, before we knew that it was nuclear reactions. A guy called Arthur Eddington, he was the person who proved Einstein right in 1919. We're coming up to that anniversary, made Einstein a superstar. He was an English astronomer, and so shortly after the First World War, proving a German physicist right. He came up with a theory of the sun, the interior of the sun, without knowing what was powering it. So it was possible to actually have a theory of the sun without knowing what powers it, because its temperature is determined only by its mass.
How interesting. How interesting. Another one, which I've got to ask, because I'm going to use them in a recipe tonight, we apparently are one-third mushroom.
Yeah, so my book is not simply about... I mean, my background is in physics.
But yeah.
I try and cover a lot of different sciences. We're a third mushroom. Yeah, well, that's simply because... a third of our DNA is the same as a mushroom. And this is, of course, evidence which supports, you know, what Darwin discovered, and that is we've all evolved from a common ancestor by a process of natural selection over about 4 billion years. In fact, there's actually a piece of your DNA, I think I put it in the book, which is in every single one of the 100 million cells in your body and in my body, and in fact in every cell of every organism on Earth. So that's the ultimate proof that we're all evolved from a common ancestor.
Amazing.
You know, a long, long time ago.
Amazing. And to that end, there's another fascinating fact, and I can kind of get this one, that you could fit the human race into the volume of a sugar cube.
Well, that's an interesting one, because again, That gets you to some really complex and profound physics, because, now, why can you do that? You can do that because the atoms that you are made of are made of a mostly empty space.
Yes.
So I'll tell you what percent, I mean, you remember we think of an atom when we're at school as like a little solar system with a little nucleus at the center, like the sun, electrons going around like, you know, going around like
a planet would.
Like planets. And I mean, Tom Stoppard, the playwright, had this fantastic image. He said, if the nucleus were like the altar at the centre of St Paul's Cathedral, then an electron is like a moth in a cathedral, flitting by, you know, 1 minute by the dome, the next minute by the altar.
Right.
But that, even that does not tell you how much empty space there is in atoms. I'm going to tell you, as a percentage, how much empty space there is in an atom. It's 99.999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 out all the empty space in all the atoms, in all the 7 billion people on planet Earth, you could fit them in the volume of a sugar cube.
That's amazing. So my teacher was right at school then when he said your head's just full of empty space.
Exactly. So the question is, why are atoms so empty? And the answer is quantum theory, which is our theory of the microscopic world of atoms. And it turns out that electrons are nothing like anything in the everyday world. They are simultaneously tiny little particles, but they're also like spread out waves, like ripples on a pond. Now, don't even try and get your head around that because it's impossible. But waves take up a lot of space, right? They need a lot of elbow room, you know? And it's because the electron waves need loads and loads and loads of elbow room that atoms are so big and there's so much empty space in them. So it all comes back to quantum theory, which I described. But yeah, but the sugar cube thing is the thing that I hope grabs people's interest. Bizarrely, it's not actually just theory. There are objects in the universe where all the empty space has been removed. They're called neutron stars, and they are the end result of the explosions of massive stars, supernovae.
Yeah.
If you were to go to a neutron star and dig out a chunk the size of a sugar cube, it would weigh as much as a human race.
Wow, what an
So it's not just theory.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was lucky enough to speak to a chap recently who's an American theoretical physicist called Ronald Mallett. And Ron has invented time travel.
Amazing.
Yeah, he was on a BBC Panorama show quite recently, and he's got the machine designed. He just needs the money to build it. And he was talking about light and its relationship with time in great detail. And one of your facts in your book is that you age more quickly on the top floor of a building than you would do on the ground floor. Now, that's an interesting one.
It is. I mean, it's interesting because it connects with what you just said.
Yeah.
This is why it's incredibly easy to imagine how to build a time machine, but it's pretty impossible to see how it could ever be done in practice.
Mm.
I mean, Einstein in 1915, this was the height of the First World War, he was working in Berlin and he came up with his theory of gravity, which tells us that time flows more slowly in strong gravity.
Yeah.
So when you're on the bottom floor of a building, you're closer to the mass of the Earth. So gravity is marginally stronger and time flows marginally more slowly. Now, in about 2010, someone showed that if you were to stand on one step of a staircase, you would age more quickly than the person one step below you.
How amazing.
And they did that with two atomic clocks, one on each. These are super accurate clocks, one on each step. Now, this is an incredibly small effect that you probably think has got absolutely nothing to do with your life. But it has, because if you actually use a sat-nav or you have a smartphone,
yeah,
which figures out your location, it figures out your location relative to what we call global positioning satellites.
Yeah.
And they're in highly elongated orbits, and they carry on board clocks. And when those satellites come in close to the Earth and gravity is stronger, the clocks slow down, and when they move further out, they speed up. And if the software in your phone or sat-nav did not compensate for that effect, you would not know your location. I think it would drift by something about 50 metres a day, something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
So actually, you think, oh, God, this is really esoteric.
Yep.
But it's not. It actually affects your daily life.
How incredible. In fact, I think Ron mentioned that, and he said that in the early days of GPS, they actually hadn't figured that. Well, they knew about it, but they, of course, hadn't factored it into the equation, and they couldn't work out why the GPSs weren't accurate in the beginning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, interesting. But it makes sense.
Well, it is interesting, yeah, because all this stuff, you think, oh, my God, this is so esoteric, what's it got to do with my life? But, in fact, it has loads to do with your life.
Fantastic. Well, there's loads more bonkers things about the universe in the book. It's a brilliant book for anybody like me who's a bit of a geek. I love it. Infinity in the Palm of Your Hand. Marcus, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, sir. And your press release, which says that you write about things that are of absolutely no use to man nor beast, is not
That's
true.
Right.
It's not true.
My wife's a nurse and she does something really, really practical that actually helps people in the real world, so she compensates for me.
Oh, brilliant. Been lovely to talk to you,
all
sir.
Right,
all the best, Mark.
Bill.
All the best.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.